he's probably backstage.
Oh, he's right
on your left.
Oh, yeah. Jason, you are. I can't start with that. Sir. So we're waiting for Rob, but he's so we do have Regent Rob Schwartz as a guest today. He just doesn't happen to be here now, but he did reach out to me this morning, so I think he's on his
So let me get, sorry, glasses.
Does anyone else lose their eyesight with allergies, or is it only am I just aging and I'm blaming it on allergies? In the last week, I've seemed to have diminished eyesight. So I'd like a motion to approve the agenda. Thank you. A second?
Sorry.
Thank you. All in favor?
All right.
Thank you. And we also need a motion to approve the February 26, 2019 meeting minutes.
So moved.
And a second? Thank you. Don't be shy. All in favor? Thanks very much. The more you do this, the more you appreciate the people who say yes, motion, and second. I'm usually the first one because I feel for them. So let me start a little bit of a report. I don't know how long, it shouldn't be too long today, but I think we do need to make sure, I want to start the president as close to on time as possible. So a couple of positive things I want to report on, and it feels like, I don't think I told everyone these things, but if I repeat myself, it's because not everyone has heard everything. So do you remember the Senate joint resolutions that we made a resolution to support NMSU on Senator Steinborn's three resolutions, 4, 5, and 6, pertaining to region vetting processes. Well, number 6, and this is really, I have to say, due to our persistent efforts, right? Remember the history of this. About 10 years ago, it was Shawie, then Rich Wood, it was me and several other gentlemen. I remembered actually being the only woman in the group. Went up to Richardson, got a vetting process signed for regents, and, of course, he left office and Martinez ripped it up. So since then, Senator Steinborn, and now he's collaborating with Mark Moore, so it's across the aisle, a joint resolution, had written these in hope of creating various doctrines around region selection, but the most important one was SJR 6, which is a region vetting process. So I think I told you last time, in maybe in January, I testified at the Rules Committee, and then Lee and I actually went up a couple weeks ago and spent 9 hours waiting to testify. And I did, I had a speech ready, and he kept going, that's enough, and I was like, damn it, I'm finishing my speech. So I finished my speech, and the funny thing was, I'd been told by a senator, I won't use names before, that he wasn't going to pass it because he didn't believe in it, he didn't believe anything. And then I spoke, and the president of Highlands University, I think Sam Minner, spoke, and after that, it passed. And it's the furthest it's gone. It went through rules, it went through judiciary, and then it went through the House Education. Okay, so the sad part is it didn't, you know, the session ended, it didn't get further.
It passed the Senate.
It passed the Senate, yes.
It didn't get taken up by the House.
All the way to the House. And that would have been probably a compromise. So remember what the Senate Joint Resolution is, an amendment to the Constitution that then goes out for a vote. We were doing some homework on this.
Right.
And I guess I want to applaud us a little bit because in 10 years, this is the furthest it's gone. So I have hopes that if we keep working on this through the Governmental Relations Committee, in a couple of years we can establish. We are lucky. We presume that the regents we have right now are good and certainly very different ilk than the ones we've had in the past, but it would be nice if there was something in process that would allow that to be a more regular occurrence. I just learned from the provost candidate, we'll talk about that later, that in Michigan they're elected regents. Elected. And I thought, wow, that's amazing. You know, by the voters, by the voters. You're not a senator. Do you need me to recognize you at this moment? Oh, you are a senator now, Matthias. I just haven't seen you for 8 months. Okay, go ahead. Bring it on.
Good
talk.
I've seen you.
I've seen you, just not here.
Yeah. I'm a senator. Has anybody ever talked about why we built a student region title?
Forever. Oh, my God. Lee, you're singing
many,
many times. We had a provision for that. For some reason, they feel it's a conflict of interest for faculty to serve as a region and not students. And I don't agree with it. I disagree with it. Yes, I agree with you. We should have it. I remember Richard Holder, when he left this seat, said, I volunteered as a faculty region. I think he knew where the bodies were buried, so they would never have him. But I agree with you. I mean, if we could do that. I think Jeff's first bill has that, but he said, come on, I'm never going to get that through. So, yeah, let's keep trying. That would be fabulous. The other bit of good news, and I this could be the last time I talk to you all about it, although we have one more meeting, is we did take the Farmington trip. I know it feels like I told you about it, but I told you pre. Let me tell you post very quickly what happened. We had really an amazing day. So just to recollect for you all, I brought the Dean of Engineering, Christos Christodoulou. I brought Craig White, former Dean of Anderson. Garnet came, of course, President Stokes. Terry Babbitt, her Chief of Staff. And then there was 8 faculty. So they represented math, biology, chemistry, Native American studies, music, cinematic arts, business, and engineering. And we met with our counterparts there. And Christos is great. He's very proactive. And he's already reached out to faculty there about, they have a school of energy, about how we could work together. Their teachers, we can, there's some process which I don't actually understand where you can extend a letter of, it's not a letter of hire, but it's, you are now, you teach at San Juan, but you are now on our faculty temporarily. And so that gives them the opportunity to teach our classes, which helps our students and their students. And remember what our goal is here, besides being a source of cultural, intellectual stimulation and help for the state, is only 9% of San Juan College's students come to a four-year university. So that is a 91% market share that, you know, hopefully we could entice kids. You know, this may be the place for you. Although it's funny, right after our trip that was kind of widely publicized, I heard that Durango offered them scholarships at Fort Lewis College. So if nothing else, we're ramping up the competition, but let's hope, you know, they choose us in the end. But as long as they consider education, I think it's a win for everyone. Yeah, that's true. And fly fishing, something I'd like to try someday. We also met in the morning, some of us, not all the disciplines were necessary for this, with one of the heads of NACI, which is Navajo Agricultural Products Industry, and the head of the Economic Development for Farmington, and also the head of the Four Corners Economic Development. And Robin, yeah, I wanted to tell you, this was interesting. We're going to follow up a little bit more about it with the tribes, but the gentleman from the Four Corners wanted to know how our faculty could assist with the tribes best using their assets in some way. And I thought, this is a great conversation. So they're in transition. Hello, President. They're in transition right now, so we're going to keep that conversation going. But I thought the step that Christo took was huge, to offer the ability to teach together. And I know that the biology professor, David Hansen, was there, had a similar experience. I'm just recapping on Farmington. And the president did a great recap for the regions the other day, which was pretty thrilling. Okay. Oh, and also I have here, not that anyone probably wants to see it, but the memo of understanding that the president signed with their president. And this is to facilitate, basically, transfers or the ability of people to come. Their students can use our libraries or go to games. It's just a welcome mat, and I think, I can't tell you how excited I am, right? I mean, you know I've talked about it forever, so I'm not good at hiding my excitement. But it was a useful trip in addition to sort of a fulfillment of a first step.
So are you excited? Is it on the web?
I don't know. Is it on your website?
Anything about the trip?
Or I have it here if anyone wants it.
We're supposed to launch that at some point.
Okay, so we're gonna. This is a preview for you all, but the world will know soon enough. So that is that. Okay, less positive news, but you know, as though it's being taken care of, I'm sure. I'm on the budget leadership team, and I thought you'd be interested. I kind of farmed through some facts to let you know cursory details, and we can ask the president and the provost more specific details if you're interested in. So we're getting $12.6 million in new funding from the state. And are you laughing because you're going to talk about it? I have so little that in common, though. Trust me, you're going to have all the smart stuff. I'm just going to do them. There are 4 things I want to say here. So 6.5 is for the funding formula, and the remaining goes to HSC and compensation. We built in a 4% tuition revenue contingency. What does that mean? We don't know how many numbers of students that is, but we're anticipating a 4% revenue drop from the enrollment decline. God willing, it goes better, and we're certainly planning for the future. I am on, and I wanted to tell you that maybe is a good place, an enrollment task force to consider new strategies. And they're thinking of things like, already Julie Coonrod has been the leader of the task force that I'm on, and they've sent this semester 3 notices, emails out to prospective students, which is very different. They've often sent one or, you know, half of one or something. I'm not trashing our people, but they're more vigilant right now. And they're upping their game. A few people are writing back, does the fact that I'm getting your email mean that I've gotten in? So it's kind of funny. And we're going to take that as, unless everybody says that, that's just that guy who didn't read the fine print that said, dear prospective student, right? But, you know, or maybe the word prospective was complex. But anyway, we're going to keep doing that. And then things like the WICHE scholarships, where you give waivers to students in specific schools. We're thinking, what if we make that more broadly applicable? Will we lose students? Turns out we only give about 48 to, we would lose 48 paying students. The perhaps isn't too much information, but I guess I want you to know what's going on, right? People are considering strategies. We're not just sitting around waiting, oh, gee, we hope more people matriculate to us. And I think everyone is very interested, what we've been talking about in this body for years, international recruitment, statewide recruitment, national recruitment, that it can no longer be a, do you need a passport to go to New Mexico? And I'm still standing by, which is what, when I came from Juilliard,
yes.
I'm telling you, everyone out, all my friends said, do you need a passport? And I only say that it's true, we have 65% foreign population at Juilliard. So I would say, okay, maybe it's not so strange. But it still weirded me out a little. And I knew we did not need one, because I had spent some time in Arizona. We do have, which I just learned, this has become sort of recurring now. We're getting $2.4 million from the Land and Grant Permanent Fund. Everyone know what that is? It's kind of the fund that we're not supposed to touch very often. But we've got consistently over the last years X amount of dollars, so we're considering that we're going to continue to get that 2.4. Lord help us if they detract that. And then we are this time, correct me if I'm wrong, President, $3.3 million we're using up reserves. So none of that is the best sign ever, but it means we're managing right now. But what we'd like to do is excel and not manage, right? I'm going to skip the part about tuition and things like that. No tuition increases so far, just fees. So just a heads up on that if your students are asking. Okay, a few more things. We did have our regent come in. Hello, sir. You're welcome to come up and sit here, or you can, you know.
You
look safe there. Yeah. You stay there. Stay there until the last minute. But I did want to say something about the regent committees. And I do want to say this with as straight a face as possible. So over the last years, there have been certain regents have dominated the regency. And so now it's very interesting. So there are four subcommittees of the regents. The FNF committee is now led by Sandra Begay, and it has on it Rob Schwartz, our regent, and Doug Brown. So that's a very different makeup. The ASAR, which is the Academic Student Affairs Research Committee, is now led by, co-chaired by Kimberly Sanchez and the student regent, Melissa Henry, and that's not uncommon. And then it has Doug Brown on it also. Thank gosh, Doug is retired. I don't know how I can do all this. The H2C committee is led by the gentleman you'll meet soon, Rob Schwartz, and also co-chaired by Melissa Henry, and has Doug on it. So I just want to point out that there are no old regents on any of those three very formidable committees, and that is shocking. I mean, probably to everyone. The audit committee does have, oh, thank you, you're pulling them up, thanks so much, does have Doug on it, Merritt and Rob. It's so much easier to read that than my notes, thank you. So I just think that's, in a small way, a bit of a victory. And I don't think it's small, actually. I'm just trying to be a little... I don't have a face for a poker, let's put it that way. And then the last thing I wanted to mention was the provost search. So we have... I'm on the search committee, and I know we're not supposed to talk a lot about it, but I do want you to know that we did have some people drop out. And they were diverse people. And the reason I'm saying this publicly is because people have said to me, why are there two white men on the search? And I want you to know that the search committee worked really hard. And we had a lot of people. And we like these candidates. We're presenting you with good candidates. But they were not all we were meant to present you with. Some of them got other offers. And no one is not going to take an offer when we, you know, are still in the middle of a search. So I don't think I'm breaching any confidence by saying that. Because I think it's important that you all know that we didn't work our butts off and only come up with two white guys. I think that's important. How many of you went to hear James Holloway? Anyone? Oh, yeah, the region. Seriously? Okay. Wow, you guys. You need to go and see if you like them. Did you go, Robin?
The diversity council member.
Fantastic. Right. I mean, I really, my heart goes out to these people. They are talking 24 hours a day, and they have to always sound enthused and tell the same story and the same jokes 100 times. And I had the opportunity to have dinner with this gentleman, James Holloway, and I'm on the committee, obviously, so I met him a couple times. And then Thursday, I'm also excited about Michael Benedict. So James Holloway was coming from the University of Michigan. He's a, I don't want to script the title, vice president, vice provost, something there, and he does a global initiative. Oddly, both gentlemen have global initiatives in their title. Michael is at Texas A&M, a vice provost and chief international officer. I think that bodes well because I think we need a bigger profile. So I do hope you'll go. Let me tell you when the times you can go are. Thursday, so you basically miss James, but you might be able to see it online. Rick, is that possible?
Yeah,
do they not live stream, but post stream?
They post stream.
Okay, and do you need a UNM ID to do that?
I got in, but I
Well, you don't even know.
Yeah.
Idea. I just wondered if a candidate could watch another candidate. That would be quite the handicap.
I believe the message that we got, email about it, said you did need to walk in.
Okay, that
oh,
just
cool.
makes me
yeah.
happier. I feel sad for the first person, that you know, the others have a bit of an advantage. Michael, 9 o'clock in the morning is the faculty time. I'm sorry, I can't, I think it's the ballroom seat, but it'll be on the web. And 3 o'clock, if you can't make the 9 o'clock, is an open forum. There's also a 10 o'clock for staff, and then throughout the day they're meeting with various constituencies and, of course, with the president. So I would really avail yourself of that opportunity. I'm not sure, is there an opportunity for faculty to give their input? Is there a survey and things?
Yes,
okay.
There is.
I don't know because I'm on the other end right now. But so then you could give your thoughts to the people.
It's open for 72 hours is my memory.
Okay.
So
oh, good. Thank
link,
you.
Actually went out in my message yesterday. Mm-hmm. I think the information, the link,
okay.
is actually
perfect.
There.
I'm as I said to Jason, I'm a little behind on my email thing. I'm not checking everything. And the last thing I just wanted to say was, there's the very neatest thing. Who's from nursing here? Because I know some of my nurses are not here today. Jan, what is this poverty simulation? Because I think that is cool.
I didn't attend, unfortunately. Dr. Montoya, Carolyn Montoya,
yes.
Put it together actually through some...
It's coordinated care services.
Yeah,
they
the poverty simulation... Exactly.
Yes.
She contracted with them. It was a little costly from what I understand. She had some grant money to pay for it.
Yes.
I understand it was fabulous.
And Carolyn Montoya was she was a senator and the chair of our curriculum committee, and she was
right.
the interim dean until we got
and
the
now
dean
she's
passed
an
her.
Associate
she's
dean
associate dean.
Of, Uncle
and it's a poverty simulation where a group, you know, think of, about a group that you work with is in a room, and in some way you are simulating poverty. I understand that's a stretch, but people are, you know, being denied loans. You're given a character to portray. Did you see that, Robert? You were there? It was presented in HSC. I don't know if you saw
it.
Yeah,
I saw it. Yeah.
I think we all need this training. Half of New Mexicans are on Medicaid. I mean, this is, you know, I self-referencing is never useful, but my broken shoulder has given me a lot of empathy for anyone with any infirmity. And I don't, probably most of us don't have a lot of, maybe have a lot of resonance for poverty in its true sense. Although I would like you to go see a film that my colleague is in. I have a chamber music partner, Richard White, and I don't know if you read the provost message. And he was, you know, he teaches now at our school, and he's a successful musician. And he was homeless and found freezing on the streets of Baltimore at the age of 4. And they made a documentary, True Confessions, I'm in the movie, because we play together. But I haven't seen the film either. But it's being premiered in Keller Hall next Thursday. And then Friday is a special donor showing. And then Sunday at the African American Performing Arts Center, that's the 7th of April. But I just reference it because this poverty simulation, I mean, you just wanted to cry with the thought of getting up close and personal with such an important issue.
What's the name of the movie?
The movie, I'm not, Raw White, I think it's Raw, because his initials are Richard A. White, Richard Anton White. So I think it's Raw Tuba. That's kind of his acronym.
A little bit more on the poverty simulation,
yeah,
though. The HSC Interprofessional Ed Group is looking at other options that are not so expensive.
Oh.
That we can bring.
We need more people.
Professional, exactly. And Dr. Penny Rogers is one of the common faculty. Just leaving that up. What's common?
Oh, good. CON. Okay,
sorry.
I've never heard it that said that word. Yeah, sorry. Okay.
Yeah, so that's in the works.
Okay. So that is my report. I hope that I'm fairly timely, President Stokes. Only 3 minutes. Okay. Please come and join us.
Can I ask a quick question for clarification?
Yeah.
So, interim associate provost Richard Wood is not applying provost?
I'll let the president field that one.
I'm sorry?
Is
Richard Wood, because you said 2 white guys are left and you did not name him.
Well, that should tell you what you need to know.
Sorry.
Yeah.
You'd have to pose that question to him.
Yeah, sorry. It's so delicate, right, when it's an internal candidate. I don't want to speak that up to him.
We do have this provost search going on, and we do have the 2 candidates. That's not the only search that's going on right now. You know, we have the senior vice president for finance and administration. That search, we have 4 finalists for that. All 4 finalists have accepted our invitation to interview. And those will be taking place in April. I don't know exactly which days, but the that will go out to the community. The equity and inclusion vice president search is continuing, and we are launching a search for enrollment management, the leader of enrollment management. Many of you know that I made Terry Babbitt my chief of staff with the enrollment task force that's going on. The enrollment is a very big issue for us, and what we now know about enrollment is that it's becoming a science, more science than art. It used to be art, now it's art and science, I guess. So having the expertise in this area and doing a search for this will be really important. Spring break seems like a long time ago to me. I don't know how it feels to you, but, you know, here we are headed toward the very end of the semester, and these searches loom pretty large in terms of the time that's involved with them, but they turn out to be pretty important. I did love the Academics Within Borders, so I share Pamela's enthusiasm for what that looked like, and I am enthused about the possibility of doing something like this in other places in years to come. I don't know how to explain how important it is to that community, how important it will be to UNM for us to form these relationships and do this kind of work throughout the state of New Mexico. So I think that that it's a model that we can use in the future. The legislative session. Pamela shared some information with you about that. Higher education in general in New Mexico received more than twice as much as we received last year. You would hope so, given that there really was a whole lot more money available. A lot going on with it, I think probably what I understand made this legislative session more difficult was that it's the first time there's been that kind of money, so there were a lot of people at the table asking for it. And in some ways, that's more challenging than not having money. So there are many who said they hadn't really seen a legislative session like this in a very, very long time. And, of course, it was my first, so it was really fascinating to watch it all unfold. We will get, as was mentioned by Pamela, some new money through the formula. We have, I believe, $46.8 million in statewide capital outlay that, unless something happens with that, because, of course, there are, the governor has, I believe, until April 7th to make decisions about some of these things that the legislature has approved. So, I'm being cautious because we don't really know whether some of these things could be vetoed or not. Obviously, we've sent a letter asking that none of our allocations from the legislature be vetoed, but we don't really know where that will go. We also had about $8.7 million in individual capital outlay, so there were opportunities to provide funding for individual projects. So we have a long list of projects. Is anyone in here associated with any of those projects that is on the list? I see a couple of hands going up a little bit. So
Art has one.
Yeah.
Because they won our competition.
That's okay.
Yeah,
the capital outlay
competition. Yeah, so we've got a lot of people talking to the governor and trying to make sure there's an understanding of why these projects, are important to the university. So hopefully we'll fare pretty well in this process. Last year we had a number of things that were line item vetoed. But we have a different governor whose perspective about this is also quite different. So we're optimistic about what this could look like. Our budget summit, normally we have a separate budget summit meeting with the board. I received the recommendations of the budget leadership team this Thursday morning, and we were originally planning to have a budget summit on April 5th. We then also had a board meeting scheduled for the following Tuesday. We've now decided to combine Budget Summit with the board meeting for April 9th. So the Budget Summit will, in fact, take place on April 9th rather than April 5th. And that is when the board will approve or not our request for tuition and fees that are part of this. And so, and then we'll come back with the full budget for approval in May. It seemed important to wait until after the governor had completed her work to do the budget summit because, you know, we won't really know what we're going to have until that process is completed. So, and I'm pleased that we're putting them together because that's quite a lot of meetings to have a Friday and a Tuesday as well. So I think we're moving toward levels of efficiency in doing the work of the board, and I'm really optimistic about how things are going to go with our new members on the board. Enthusiastic about their perspectives about governance, their interest in the success of the university. We were planning the finance and facilities meeting with Sandra Breguet, who's the chair. We were having that conversation at lunch today, and as she left, I just shared with the team how good it's going to be to work with her in that role, and so and I'm sure I'll feel the same about other chairs since we have the opportunity to talk about those things. I really hadn't planned to talk about much else here, but I did want to mention that I've had some people approach me about an MOU that we have had in the past with the CIA, an MOU related to us being a signature school. And I asked the advisory committee with the program to look at that. They've come back with a recommendation that we sign this MOU with the CIA. It's an opportunity for our career services to work with the CIA. They have a lot of programming on campus. They recruit a lot of students. They're really interested in diversifying. But I've also had some feedback from other parts of campus about concern about our process for considering the signature, signing such an MOU. And so I'm really looking at looking for opportunities for faculty to provide their feedback about this particular MOU. And so it's been recommended that I go to COG and ask for their input. And so I'm looking for those opportunities for people to weigh in on the signature score. What I will say is that the advisory group voted, and they went back to the CIA, and there was some language in the MOU where the CIA, which way does it go? This was in no way an endorsement of UNM by the CIA, but we didn't have comparable language going the other way. They did change the MOU so that, it works both ways. They can't say we're endorsing them, and they can't say they're endorsing us. And that was one of the issues that was raised. But there are some, particular students involved in work across the world and faculty engaged in that work as well that worry a little bit about having something that's too visible as a connection. There are lots of arguments on all sides, and I think, what I'm most interested in is making sure that there are, that people know that I'm wanting to hear about perspectives about signing this MOU. Mm-hmm. So I haven't yet signed it, just I've been asked what the status is. It's kind of sitting on my desk in a big folder with some input from the past, but I'm still actively looking for that feedback.
What's your time frame?
I know that there's some time pressure because there are visitors from the CIA, but I'm not going to be able to make that the parameters around this. I've been sitting on it for a while. There's been a lot going on in my office, and so I would like to get this all settled before the end of the semester. But that's assuming that you know, I have the opportunity to really hear from people.
Could I ask Jason?
Are you asking for input, or are you going to follow up with some kind of a forum or something like that?
Well, you know, I'm trying to figure out how best to get the input. I am asking.
Previous apartment meeting last week, one of my colleagues brought up this issue, and I was actually going to ask you about it, so that's good that you topicalized it. But I'm not sure exactly what group he's working with or who he's been talking to, but they were concerned that they wouldn't be able to give their feedback. So I could send your office his name, or I can have him write you or something.
So maybe I could ask all of you to go back to your people. We've heard good and bad about this, and if anyone has comments, if you have trouble getting to the president, of course, write to us and we'll get it to her, but I'm sure you can easily find her website as well. This is a great opportunity. It happened last time in the dark a little bit, and I'm not saying, I actually think it's a good thing, but, you know, if someone has a voice they'd like to add to this, then let's do it. This is your opportunity. So thank you for that.
All right. So with that, you know, I'm happy to answer questions.
Yes, Lee.
So I'm in the School of Medicine and wanted to talk about an HSC issue. There is a bill waiting for the governor's signature relating to prior authorizations. Are you familiar with what those are?
Yes.
They are the plague of medical care. And the prior auth bill was authored and then enabled through passage by the New Mexico Society and Greater Alabama Medical Association, and I was part of that. It sets strict rules and limits for how much time an insurance company can take to do a prior authorization and how an appeal concerned and prior auth should proceed. A prior authorization process is a huge burden on the productivity of those of us who practice medicine, and it's a huge burden on consumers of medical care, which I think many in the audience who get their medical care for UNM, for instance, could sympathize with. I don't know to what extent this is on Chancellor Roth's radar, because he tends to concentrate on capital projects and such, but if you are in repeated contact with the governor up until the signing deadline, I would really, really, really urge you to talk to her about it.
So what I don't know the specific bill, so I'm not sure of the content.
I can send it to you.
But, well, what I wanted to share is that the health sciences leadership team has been following quite a number of health science related issues in the legislature. And there is at least one piece of legislation that they are very concerned about, that they are actively talking to the governor about. So I don't know which one it is, but I will check on that. And
at least send what you have.
Okay.
Other than it's something, yeah,
right.
Great. Okay.
So I'm suspecting that it might be the same one.
I sure hope so.
And actually,
but I can tell you, they have been. I don't know if Rob knows.
But he might. He's chairing the region subcommittee, and he's the health policy lawyer. So
right.
Maybe,
it takes an immense amount of staff and physician time to deal with prior authorization.
Yeah.
You have no idea.
Okay. All right. Let me stop that one for now. Anybody else? Questions for the president of your university? Yes, Stephanie.
I'm one of our faculty members that teaches into the evening and later into the evening, and I was just wondering if we could get an update on where the campus safety task force is, or when we might be hearing next about what's coming out of that.
Well, so that group, the leaders that include someone from that, the Dean of Students and then someone from the police department are co-chairing that task force. They have been giving me a plan for constituting their work, and so the most recent information I have is that they're really trying to figure out the groups of people that will work on various areas of campus safety. So it's going to be pretty broadly configured, but with a small team that can move quickly to deal with specific issues. So that's my latest, but I will, what I want to be sure I do is make a note of this, because I'd like to bring you a fuller report at the next time I get a chance to meet with you.
Stephanie, when you leave late at night, are you able to ask the police for assistance?
So I spoke with our chief
good
Monday and said that, yeah, it's possible to do that, but they don't have a lot of staffing for that, so one could be waiting for quite a while.
But I'm wondering if they knew that a class was getting out at 7:30, 9 o'clock, whatever it is, they could post someone there at that hour as you all left the building. Would that be reasonable, do you think? Or
That's something for me to check on. I mean, these are issues that I continue to hear about, and we really do need significant presence on campus. I did see that they were installing additional lighting just in the last few days. I just saw them building trenches around the duck pond. Where are you actually teaching?
Yeah,
okay, all right. So they're putting up a lot of lighting, but also part of what we did receive in capital outlay, state capital outlay, involved additional security. What we do not have yet is that recurring funds to significantly expand our police department. And so we've got some additional work to do there to make sure we have the kind of coverage that I think our faculty and staff and students really feel like they need. And there's always a balance around this, as you know. But, all right, so I'll hope to come back with a little
thank
more
you.
Information.
Thank you. Any other questions? Thank you, President Stokes. Appreciate it. Provost Wood, will you join us? I feel like I'm a game show host today.
Speaking of consumers of healthcare, here comes Rich Wood. Greetings all.
Hello, sir.
I spent 7.5 hours in your ER yesterday.
Wasn't that fun?
Some of you remember a year ago I took a shot to the head and had a major concussion walking around all bandaged.
He's into falls.
But a year to the day after that, I skied too close to a tree at Taos and banged my elbow and didn't break the skin or anything, but 4 days later it was incredibly red and inflamed and infected. And so I had to go in and get the whole thing drained and all that. So.
And he broke his finger in between them playing basketball. So a little kamikaze sports guy there.
A little beaten bad.
Well, welcome.
Those trees are vicious.
Yeah, they reach out.
So there's a lot going on. I think I would just stand for questions because there may be a lot of things you want to know about.
I thought maybe you could start with HLC. You know,
sure.
I know we finished it. Where are we? How long will it take?
Did I brief you already?
No, I know. I just said that to them, too. I feel like I say the same thing over and over again.
Sorry.
But I don't think it just finished since our last set of meetings.
Very quick story. We haven't gotten the draft report yet. The process is they'll send a draft report from the visiting committee. We then have a chance to respond just to objections of fact. Then it goes not back to that committee, but to what's called the institutional committee of the HLC. They will do the final accreditation. We did have an exit meeting. My best read would be just guessing. I would expect this to be fully accredited, maybe with some kind of monitoring around some of the issues raised in past reports, just to assure that we're making progress on that. But I'm certainly hopeful for a clean report.
I mean, can I just be blunt? Do you think they'll monitor us on shared governance? Because
I would think that might well be. That was certainly
sure
something they asked.
Better,
that was certainly something they asked a lot.
Quite the report, yeah.
I'm just recognizing Regent Schwartz is here.
Yes, yes.
Ryan Botel from the Journal is here.
That's okay. I stayed in front of him anyway.
Yeah.
Okay, what else? What else can we talk to you about? What do you think is
important? You can ask him about anything you want to know.
I'm going to keep plying him in questions unless you do. Go ahead.
So I was just wondering if you guys, what kind of strategies we're talking about now for containing the budget shortfall? And now that the legislature is over and you kind of know the numbers.
Yeah.
Kind of pre-leading into our BLT meeting.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
So the BLT has been working really hard on this, and we don't have great options now. Before I answer that question, we're working on a set of better options around better strategic budgeting models that will help prevent us from getting into this circumstance by better incentivizing departments that do creative things to recruit students and retain students. Some part of the budget would flow automatically to units that are serving more students. Now, you don't want to overdo that, because then you turn yourself into a teaching college without an actual intellectual vision and research mission. But it, to some limited degree, to create incentives that really reward departments and colleges for doing creative things on the teaching front might be part of that solution. That's bubbling up from the redesign, from the DLT. We'll then go to the president's recommendation. She's aware of kind of the direction that, and then would eventually go to the regents as sort of a proposal for what the future budget model would be. But that doesn't solve the immediate problem. Mm-hmm. The immediate problem is partly the enrollment hit we took in the fall that cut about $9 million out of the budget, but also all those years of budget cuts from the state that we met through a variety of strategies, and in particular in the last year, as the economy took off and state revenues took off, a belief that we might really do well in the legislature to help fill some of that. So we filled parts of the budget cut with one-time measures.
I talked about those, okay. Yeah.
And we did not do as well with the legislature as we had hoped to for a variety of reasons. So that means we, even with the new money from the state President Stokes spoke of, we still face a budget hole this year. So what we're doing is a combination of several things. One, some units will take some budget cuts.
One and a half.
The discussion right now is 1.5. We hope to pull that down. We're going to propose some continued use of one-time money in a limited way, because you don't want to overdrain the reserve. We've not approved some of the proposals for new funding that came forward. We had about $9 million in proposals for new funding. We only authorized about $5 million of those, of the most strategic ones that we just like. One way we've driven our retention and graduation rates higher is through a much, much better advising system. We're going to put some new money into the advising structure. And then the enrollment task force that Terry Babbitt's been part of, really trying to help with both our enrollment of new students and then with our retention efforts, because we took hits on both those fronts this year. A combination of those things is what's going to be brought forward, and then BLT's final deliberations are really hard choices about, we will be requesting a tuition rise, tuition and fee rise in a very limited way, targeted specifically so that money would go to programs that serve students. Combination across those things means if you want to pull the tuition rise down, then you have to use up more of your reserves. Or if you want to use less of your reserves, then you have to ask for more of a tuition rise or cut units more than 1.5%. It's all down to that kind of zero-sum game where you're trying to shuffle pieces.
It's not tuition, it's differential tuition for some, and it's upper division classes, right?
So it's a combination. A rise to the premium for upper division courses everywhere. A rise to the graduate premium and a bit of a spreading of that so that graduate students would pay more. That's partly premised on. The differential between our undergrad and graduate tuitions are much, much smaller than our peer institutions are. So the raise graduate tuition. And then
IT.
What Campbell is referring to is directed tuition to arts and science, which is important to understand partly because it helps solve arts and science budget issues, but also it would be a first step towards the kind of budgeting model that is coming out of that DLT process for the long-term strategic budgeting. We've looked at three options. The one that I think the recommendation is going to go towards differentiates tuitions across units. Mm-hmm. And then Pamela's referring to students have voted for a 4% increased fees, separate from tuition, but fees, because they had to cut a bunch of their units in light of enrollment fall. Mm-hmm. So the proposal will include that, and then they asked to remove the cost of IT infrastructure at UNM off of those student fee review board fees. And so the proposal will include a new $90 student fee separate from the SFRB process. Mm-hmm. And the students, all these are, this whole recommendation was voted on in the preliminary vote last week. Unanimous support, including graduate students from
they're
the
United States.
It's been really good, hard work on it. Most exciting, none of this is very exciting, but a really exciting new initiative is We're now negotiating with Adobe on a proposal that really could be a transformative thing for education at UNM in a kind of age of digital literacy and digital literacy. We think we're going to be able to cut a deal that would give every single person on campus, part-time, full-time, student, staff, faculty, access to the full Adobe suite of creative tools, like dozens of products.
That's you.
For a $20 fee a year. If you buy that on the open market, it's $1,000 a year. Now, that's not because Adobe's lovely and generous. It's because they want to instill a whole generation of next-generation leaders with their products, so they're willing to cut a deal on things. And we may bring that forward as early as... I mean, this is, like, happening as we speak. So it's both a little late in the game. Arguably, we should wait and spend 6 months thinking about it. On the other hand, we've got great people vetting it, technical people vetting it, and it just looks too good not to do. And so we may bring that forward. Mm-hmm.
Yes, Raj.
What's the actual budget and what's the deficient amount
that you're looking at? The proposal will include about $3 million in one-time reserves.
3.3?
3.3. Ballpark of about $3 million in new tuition. About $1.7 million in new fees. And cuts of about 1.5% across all.
And is the shortfall about 12 million? Is that why we're doing
this? I don't have it.
Okay. It used to be around 11.
It was about 11. Built it. If you counted all those requests for new funds, it was more like an $18 million hole. We haven't funded all of those. I can get you all the books. The BLT will be presenting those later this week.
And the budget summit will be relevant.
And, you know, all this is related to the fact that, look, 10 years ago, we were about the same number of students we are now. And today, in real dollar terms, so adjusted for inflation, we have $25 million a year less to spend on our education mission. That's where you get it as a whole. You're just not easy.
Lindsay.
I wanted to ask, so for raising graduate student tuition, a lot of folks have that graduate student pay through external grants. Mm-hmm. And so maybe this is kind of too detailed, but how would that work for if I have a grant for 5 years that's supposed to cover graduate student tuition? Mm-hmm. There's some tuition rises built in, but maybe not as much. So how would that cover?
So new grants would have to write in the new tuition,
sure.
Right? Standing grants, one possibility would be you and I both run grants. You shuffle budgets all the time and figure out, shuffle categories, and maybe ask for permission from funders to move money out of one category into another category. But others of those, other graduate, I know you don't love that, but that's some one thing one has to do sometimes.
Yeah.
And a lot of tuition is paid by the university, right? If you're TAing a course, often your tuition is paid by the university, and we'd have to buttress that fund to pay the internal fees.
So something you said raised the second question, so I hope I get to ask both. The first point had to do with the Adobe deal, and I wondered whether UNM and HSC as well licenses Adobe products and would save a lot of money that way.
We do. $250,000 a year in Adobe licenses. We would fold that in. That's how we would fund the faculty and staff licensing piece of this.
So
partially.
You would pay for that?
We would
pay the $10 for
it. Yeah, right.
No. The other question.
Yeah, faculty and staff would not pay anything.
Okay. The other question with follow up is related to recruitment. And I think the president said there were three separate tranches of emails that went out trying to recruit students to UNM. I was wondering what email lists were used. The follow-up is, back in the dark ages, I remember Michigan or Michigan State used to particularly aim letters at the time to respective honors college candidates, and now we have an honors college, so maybe that is something to attract students.
I'll answer very briefly, and if you want detailed answers, Terry Batty is a better position on this. Before I go there, I do want to clarify the Adobe thing. The negotiations are least advanced so far with the North Campus, that is HSC faculty. HSC is not committed to this yet, and so that's part of the conversation still ongoing. So what they did back then, is not what we do now, even if you change the letter to email. We now have this incredibly differentiated set of tools that are used, email, social media, and a whole variety of things. And mail, because families sometimes need paper mail. It's a pretty sophisticated operation run out of enrollment management, and one of the recommendations coming forward from the enrollment task force is to help you do that game still more with more social media use. Because one does still hear, peers with kids of high school age, one still hears that they get more contact from other universities than they do from their dad now. Mm-hmm. When we've gone and followed up on that, it's often the case that they actually have gotten contact from their dad. Kids just don't read email. I mean, there's a number of ways that that falls through. So you can't believe all the anecdotal stuff you hear, and we're certainly working on it. Yeah. Terry, do you want to add any more to that?
And the honors, do we?
Yeah, we actively recruit. In fact, honors just hired a recruiter to help generate more and more. We've done a lot already.
Any other questions for the post? So with the
Adobe thing that you guys are working on,
yes. It would be an option for branches to be involved, and they could choose in or out on the current.
Any other questions for the provost? Okay. Thank you, provost. Please try not to, trees and things.
Yeah. I'm good. Thanks, y'all.
If he asks you to play basketball, just say no.
The kindest thing.
Oh, okay. No more doctor stuff. Regent Schwartz, please come join us up here. And you can make this higher. I always feel guilty if someone's too low. I didn't get here on purpose of lowering. So I'd like to introduce you all to Regent Rob Schwartz. I have a bio here, but what I want to tell you that's of interest to me, he did get his Bachelor of Philosophy from Stanford and a JD from Harvard. But he has a specialty in health law, which I guess when it says an emerging field, it's not so emerging anymore, is it?
It was at the beginning, when I first started studying.
Okay, when you started.
120 years ago, right?
On the cave paintings,
just kidding.
And then he's a recognized scholar in the area of bioethics, and you teach in the School of Medicine, bioethics.
I taught regularly in the Health Sciences Center, and the Medical School, Nursing School, some of the other programs as well as the law school.
And I like him because he's the only regent I've met who actually understands what classical piano is. He's actually been to concerts. do that. So thank you for joining us today.
Well, thank you very much for inviting me.
Yeah, it's a pleasure.
I appreciate the opportunity. I'm one of Professor Pyle's fans. Her fan in her role as a pianist and her role as a faculty member. We've served on committees for over many years in the past 40 years. And let me just say what I thought I would do today is just give you a word about myself, so you know where I come from, because I do have a different background from most regents, I think, and then talk about the Board of Regents and how our conversations with each other and how we're thinking about the role of the board, and then talk maybe about some specific issues that we might be able to work on that I'm hoping we'll all work on together. I came to New Mexico in 1973 originally. I finished law school within a year as a judicial clerk, worked for a judge for a year, came out here to represent, to practice Indian law. I represent the Navajo tribe and their action, their Indian Claims Commission action against the United States, represented Taos Pueblo as general counsel at the beginning, practiced law for a couple of years, not quite long enough to become competent, but almost long enough to become a competent lawyer. I loved Albuquerque, loved New Mexico, and there was a position available at the law school, and I went to law school, where I've been teaching since 1976, so it's been 40-some-odd years that I was teaching there. I was a full-time faculty member for all of that time until I became an emeritus faculty member the last several years. I try to arrange to leave every 4 or 5 years, as many faculty members do. I did a lot of visits at different law schools around the country, different universities. I had a couple of Fulbrights in there, and there were some other grants and research programs, research leaves that I took in the course of my 40 years, but it was a pretty much standard academic faculty career, I think, for most of the time I was here. I became an emeritus professor, I think, almost as I keep on thinking of it as yesterday, but it was actually about 9 or 10 years ago now. But I've been teaching as a volunteer at the law school one semester a year since then, and I continue to teach during that one semester. And the other semester, I teach at the University of California. I teach at Hastings Law School, which is in San Francisco, and also at UCSF. I have my academic appointment in the psychiatry department at UCSF, and the psychiatry residents take my law classes, and my law students take the medical school classes, and my health law students take those medical school classes as well. So that's my background, and it really is at least an academic background, because my sources aren't at least unusual for the regions. Let me talk a little bit about the regions itself. You know, it was a strange appointment process this year, as many of you probably know. When I returned from California last December and was whining about something, and one of my colleagues at the law school said, well, you can't just keep on whining. It's been 40 years you've been whining about this kind of thing. Do something about it. And then I called the governor's office and said, how do you apply to be a regent? And the response was, you do it all online. If you're interested, file something online. Here's the website. And so I went online and I filled out the application online and put in a cover letter. And so, much to my surprise, about 2 weeks later, I was actually called and told to show up the next day for an interview with an expert committee, included two or three former university presidents, several former regents members at UNM or at New Mexico State, New Mexico Tech also, the research universities in New Mexico, a substantial interview that included many questions about that they wanted to know my experience in running a $3 billion institution. absolutely zero. At one point, they were sort of interested in the fact that I had been president of the board of the ACLU of New Mexico for several years, actually. They never, in fact, discovered that we had one half-time employee that was actually president of the board. I was surprised about 3 weeks later to get a call saying Governor wanted to appoint me as a regent. And it's a very, in terms of background, in terms of experience, a very diverse group of regents. I wouldn't exactly call it a merit-based process, but it had some aspects, at least, of merit-based to it. And it was interesting for me to meet my colleagues. There are five new regents who've just been appointed. And we've now been, as we've sat at a regents meeting, at one meeting, a second one coming up. And I think that there will be some substantial changes in the attitude, at least, of the Board of Regents. The problem has not been that the regents haven't been actively involved in the university. The problem has been that the regents have been too actively involved in the university. At least that's from my perspective. I think many of those, many of you, I think, are in that position as well. Our job is to promote and to develop general policy, not to manage the university, not to administer the university. And I think that we're going to be very careful in making sure that we have good, reasonable, thoughtful policies and that we have a high-quality administration to administer those policies. And I think that's, I'm certainly pleased with what I've seen and the way the university has gone in that direction. I do think that we need to work on how we do the oversight. I think that we need to do an annual review of ourselves and the regions and see how those regions are operating. Because I can tell you I've read all the reports, I think many of the reports that went to the HLC and many other reports that have been written in the last decade. My past regents have been very kind in providing me their end-of-tour reports on what they learned as a regent. And there's been, of course, really heavy criticism of the regents as an institution. Also, I think the failure of the regents to do an appropriate and open 360-degree review of the president of the university and of ourselves. So I think that is something that the regents are going to take very seriously over the next year. I also think that we're going to view ourselves as supporters of the university. We are. Everyone who's been appointed is a strong supporter of this university and truly committed to the university. We do our whining, too, but, it's good-natured whining and whining from the point of view of someone who's, in fact, really supportive of this institution. When you look at the budget, for example, the budget is inadequate. It's inadequate for this university. If New Mexico is going to have a good flagship university, a very strong flagship university, we need more resources than we have. And you can see that in so many different ways. I'm sure each of you see it in a different way and in a different program, but faculty salaries are obviously one that is extraordinarily important. And you know that we're hemorrhaging faculty, and they're really good faculty, and it's really going to be important for us to be able to make our case to the legislature. And I think we're in a particularly good position to be able to make that case. There are other things that I've been, I mean, I've say, 40 years at the university, I was, and I knew nothing. There's so much that I'm learning and have had exposure to now. I mean, it hadn't. I knew that one of the reasons I was interested in doing this work was my interest in the Health Sciences Center and in the programs, the academic programs at the Health Sciences Center, but also the healthcare system that we run. We run one of the biggest healthcare systems in the state. There are an awful lot of people who depend upon this healthcare system for healthcare, independent of the academic side of the Health Sciences Center. That is more than 50%. Close to two-thirds of the $3 billion budget of the university is the healthcare system. And if we're going to have good quality healthcare in New Mexico, if Rich is going to be able to get his, if he's going to be able to continue to ski and to run these terrible risks every winter, we're going to need resources for that as well. So it's not just faculty salaries that are the university needs, but there are really substantial university needs. I think you're going to be pleased by the position of the regents with regard to the faculty. Obviously, when you think about government, about shared language, you're thinking primarily about the regents who have constitutional authority in New Mexico, the administration, which really has the obligation to run and administer and manage the organization, although the Constitution technically gives management power to the regents, unfortunately, I think, and the faculty, who should be in complete control of the academic program at the university. And I think you're going to see, say, regents who recognize that we're all going to have to work together and we're going to have to be able to start with a respect for each other and respect for those different roles if, in fact, the university is going to be successful. And we're going to be better if we're going to succeed as regents if President Stokes succeeds as president, if the faculty succeeds in managing the academic program of the university. So we are, I think, I can speak for one regent, but I think that my colleagues, by and large, agree that we are genuinely really committed to that, and really committed to the faculty involvement. The university academic programs are the faculty, and we expect the faculty to be able to do that kind of work, to develop those programs, to develop the teaching programs, to develop the research protocols, and to be able to decide on issues relating to public service. Again, how we're going to do this, I think we're all going to learn over the next few years how to go about being successful regents, and we hope that you will help us. I hope you'll contact me. My email address is schwartz@law.unm.edu. You are welcome to write to me anytime, and I'll get back to you as soon as I possibly can. I have my stuff at my office at the law school, 277-3119. You're welcome to call there anytime. I'd be happy to meet with you whenever you'd like to meet. I must tell you, it's been great to be here for the last hour of this meeting and to be at a meeting of the university where the issue of soccer has not arisen.
We just started as a joke earlier. That's okay.
That is a remark. That is an issue that takes up a huge amount of energy and time, and too bad, but that's the case. But we might think about what, in a practical sense, what it is that we can do to help with help the university develop appropriate policy and help the faculty and help the administration in the tasks that the faculty and the administration have. And let me just start by saying one of those is actually the role of athletics. It would also be nice to know something more about that and to actually have a sense of given the mission and the vision and the values of the university, where do athletics fit in? We have our starting point, the mission, the vision, and the values of the university. And what I would like to see is a campus-wide, maybe community-wide, 4 or 5 month discussion. Bring in speakers, bring in people who know what they're talking about, have general discussions, small discussions in the dorms and in the faculties and elsewhere, and bigger discussions on what the role of athletics ought to be. And when we have that kind of policy figured out, when we've at least been able to think about those issues, I think we can move on and try to figure out as a practical matter what that means for what happens at the university. And I would like to be able to see a strengthening of the Honors College. I realize we've been moving in that direction, you look at not only recruitment but other issues and what causes the best students to stay in state. Why do the best kind of students in Texas go to University of Texas? Not all of them, obviously, but so many of them. And I think that the work on the Honors College is going to be important. As I mentioned before, there's a desperate need to provide a better, not just salaries, but better travel benefits and other resources for faculty. And I think that we can do a much better job working with the governments in New Mexico, especially with the state legislature in New Mexico. As I say, I spent many years on the Faculty Senate and on many other committees and commissions and task forces over the years. But one idea that I've always wanted to implement is to get the faculty, and separately the students, who, by the way, are really interested in this idea, but get the faculty to start out with to adopt a legislator. Let's take a legislator. It doesn't have to be someone from Albuquerque. So let's take a legislator, assign that person to a couple faculty members, and invite them down. Have them meet your students. Have them come to a class. Have them see what we are actually doing here, because, you know, it's pretty impressive. And I can tell you that if a legislator who has no idea what was going on at the University of New Mexico comes and sits with you and sees how you prepare for class and sees what happens in class and sees what your students are doing and talks to your students, it's going to make a real difference in the way that they view the university.
We started an Region Adopt a College program.
Yes.
So this is a great idea.
It at least moves in that direction, yeah. And I say, I think it's a great idea to have the students do the same thing. And we have students from every House district and every Senate district in New Mexico. And they ought to be seeing their representatives from time to time and showing them around and having them understand the campus and seeing what we're doing, not just for people in Albuquerque, but for people around the state. Because I think that it's actually pretty substantial. I have had an interest over the years in a disciplinary study. That's the how I do my... my work with the medical school and the law school. We started here about 20 years ago on Law and Medicine Day, where we got one class, 100 law students and 100 medical students together to talk about ethics and professional responsibility. And if the law students learned a lot from the medical students, the medical students learned a lot from the law students. It has been discontinued here, unfortunately, because it's just so hard to find room in the curriculum. I hope it will be reinstated next year. But there are several other law schools and medical schools in the country now who've taken our model and actually use it. We do it regularly at Hastings and UCSF in California, for example, and there are others as well that do this every year, and I think we can institute that again, too, on the educational side, but it also brings faculty from the law school and the Health Sciences Center together, and that also historically has been really valuable. So those are some of the issues that I'd love to work with you on, and I hope that we can do that the new region, speaking again from my colleagues, probably inappropriately, but we are really committed to the university. We recognize that faculty is the heart of the university, and we want to work with you to see the university succeed. Mm-hmm.
Well, I can't tell you, I almost want to cry, right?
I know.
It's just that's
so
a different process.
So
some of us have long battled some other the issues you mentioned. You know, you and I spoke privately about this board support for the university. So on boards, usually there's a financial incentive, right? You give some money to do something. But what could the board do outside to supporters? How could you garner support at the legislature or some other places for us? Could you think of ways, or is that something you thought of already?
You know, rich people.
Yeah. Unfortunately, I don't know rich people. On the other hand, there are several members of the board who do know rich people.
Yeah.
This is not the same as the foundation board.
No.
This is not the same as a not-for-profit because it's a government agency, too. And so we have different roles. The primary role is not out talking to rich people and raising money. I see I've done that for the ACLU and other organizations. But I do think that we have an obligation to help those within the university looking for those kinds, where there's substantial interest in grants, for example, or gifts to the university. There's every reason to believe the regents ought to be involved to the extent we can be helpful. You don't want us there if we're not going to be helpful. But in fact, to the extent that we're helpful and there are people with very substantial backgrounds in different areas, then I think that we should be there, and I think that we're all willing to be there. I think that we have an obligation to help explain to the legislature what we're doing and why it's really good, why it's so important for the state of New Mexico. Because we all believe that this institution is fundamental to the development of the state of New Mexico, and we need to be able to explain that to legislators. We need to do that not only during the brief legislative session, But I think we need to do that the rest of the year, too, at a time when we can actually sit down with someone and show them around the campus and just let people watch a class and do other kinds of work like that. And I think I do think that the regents, that the legislators, and I think the legislators, to be honest, would be happiest with the faculty doing that. Mm-hmm. But they'd be happy with the regents doing it, too, and probably be happiest with having some kind of combination. And I would hope that we would do that. I would hope that we could also, I mean, we're not going to be investigators on grants in our role, but we should be supporting those people who are and figuring out what we can do where it's possible to help to be able to advance that. Some of us have some academic connections. We've done grants before. Some of us don't, those who don't have other substantial backgrounds in community organizations and with other aspects that involve that could really help the university serve its mission.
Mm-hmm. I know Senator Daniel Ivy Soto volunteered to come to classes. I don't know if you want to be inflicted on the law school with a law professor, or a lawyer, but that's one idea. I think the Governmental Relations Committee could work on this and work with the students on this.
It's a great idea. Questions for Regent Schwartz?
Lee.
Of course.
I wish you never talked. No, I come.
Sorry.
Oh, no, I love that you talk. Thank you.
So one idea that I floated 10 to 15 years ago that I was told had been tried before and didn't work was to get members of the legislature down here to round with us in the hospital so that they can see for themselves how under-resourced we are. And I wondered if, when you talked about them going to classes, mm-hmm. I wonder if that could be part of it.
That's a great idea.
I think it'd be a fabulous idea. I think it'd be a great idea. For one thing, it's sort of exciting to do that, to mm-hmm. be honest. I always have my health law students, where it's possible, mm-hmm. I have my health law students around with somebody mm-hmm. because it's just a different kind of experience. Mm-hmm. And it's a spectacular experience for those law students who really otherwise have no understanding of what the doctor-patient relationship, how the doctor-patient relationship develops. But I think that they would find it to be really interesting and would be very interesting in coming, and I think that they would learn a great deal. And you don't have to go very far in the hospital, I've learned in the last couple of months, to see where the really glaring deficiencies are and where the really substantial needs are.
You got it. Yeah.
My branch campuses, you guys, three of you, anything to say to a regent? Sorry, Fanny, I'll get you out there. I didn't see you.
Sure.
Okay, Tracy, I was looking there, but you go.
I was just going to steal your idea and invite you to our campus at any time you want to come and sit in any of our classes or see what we do, because in many ways our needs are very different, and what we do is very different, and we do it with more than twice the load here and no assistance. So please come anytime, and I'd be happy to show you what we do and how great our students are, how dedicated they are.
Yeah, I know that that's true, and I will look forward to doing that. Mm-hmm. And you have a graduate of your campus on the Regents now, too.
Yes.
Sandra Begay, mm-hmm. who is a remarkable success story, and she attributes it to UNM Gallup, success altogether, academic success to UNM Gallup. And I think that I have a lot to learn about the branch campuses, but I've been reading about them, and I realize they're very different programs in some respects. Some of the programs are very similar to here. Some of them are very different, and I need to learn more, certainly.
You're welcome.
Okay.
So, well, first of all, thank you so much for coming and visiting with us. And I'm really enjoying your energy and mm-hmm. what you have to say. It's very refreshing from a region. My name is Finney Coleman. I'm the faculty senate president-elect. So hopefully we'll have a lot of interactions with you all in the coming year. For the past 3 years, or 3 years before this year, I chaired the Athletics Council. And can't let you out of here without... there won't be a soccer question. I'm wondering to what degree there's interest on the regents to look at the debt service on the PIP and how that came to be in our university structure, which is so anomalous relative to, say, LSU or other major sports programs. And it just so happens that the debt service just about matches what it is that their deficit. And also, there's no way for us to cut our way out of the current deficit problem in athletics. Are the Regents going to come up with a more sensible way of addressing this issue?
I hope so. I mean, I don't know enough about athletics to be able to give you a good policy-based answer to what I would do if I were in charge of the world. And thank God I'm not. But in fact, I do think that we have to deal with athletics. It is a tremendous expense, and as you know, there's a tremendous deficit that we haven't actually figured out whether we're going to have or how we're going to have it repaid. Obviously, money that goes into athletics is not going into the actual core academic activities in the university. That's actually where it's, from my point of view, most necessary now. And I think my hope is that we could have. I need to hear more about the economics of athletics. I need to hear more from people who know about it, from the sociology of athletics. I want to know what it does to it for a community. I have my own biases and prejudices, but I don't want to make a decision based on those biases and prejudices. I really want to be able to learn more with you and with the students and with people in the community about what athletics do, what they cost, what they bring. I don't think we want to create... we don't want to... I don't want to indict... maybe the wrong word to use. I don't think that anyone... I'm not out to find out what people have done that was wrong in the past, except to the extent that we can learn from it and avoid it in the future. But we have to have a policy about athletics going forward. And it should be one... I think it should start with the mission, the vision, and the values of the university. Those are established. They're nicely written statements, I think, and they actually have meaning. And I think we should start looking at those and then look at athletics and figure out to what extent it serves some or all of those missions, mission, vision, and values, and then how we develop a coherent program going forward.
I think that's a brilliant answer. I think that's the right answer. Unfortunately, we're making decisions before we've done the things that you're suggesting that we do. So... is there any way for our Regents to grab a hold of this, to do the things that you're suggesting, right? And I think that they should be done. And then use that as they move forward in making decisions about the future of athletics.
Yeah, I mean, I've talked to some of the other Regents about this, and they agree that we ought to go in this direction. I think that the university administration, by and large, agrees too. And you say, we've just been doing this for a couple of weeks, so we really haven't had time to implement that. And we're coming to the end of this school year. I don't think we're going to get anything like this done between now and the middle of April, to be honest. But I would see next fall semester is the time to do this.
You may have ideas, and if you do, let me know, and we can discuss this now if there's time. I know you probably...
Mr. Schwartz, I'm sort of running late.
Yeah, sorry.
I know, I so enjoy you. Unless there's a quick question from another... Well, let's see if someone else besides Lee wants to talk. Anyone else? Question for Regent Schwartz? Although, as you can tell, he's pretty accessible. So, yeah, I'm sorry. I think I have
okay.
to thank you
very much. I very much appreciate
stay.
It. Yeah,
you know,
I will say, and I'll look forward to working with you all over the course of the
thank
next
you.
6 years, I hope.
And we really can't tell you how much it means. That's a first one. Okay, Finney, let's whip through these. Form Cs.
I don't think I have anything.
Oh, no, it's Form Cs. You have plenty.
I do have room.
Yeah.
I didn't know that I would have.
There are a lot of people who will be mad if you don't have this.
Yeah.
So we just have the second.
We just need a second.
Come as a motion from.
Good. Thank you very much.
Have a second.
You've got a second from Lee. All in favor?
All in favor?
Aye. Any extensions? Okay, great. Thanks very much. Okay, Sheila, thank you for waiting. We're not too late for you, but we are a little late. I apologize. Sheila Jurnak is here. I think this is our third time trying to get this one right, the approval of the calendar. Did it work out, Dennis? Okay, yes. We thought we caught something, but I think we're okay.
The calendar that was in the agenda packet on the web was not the correct
Perfect.
Version.
So we have spies amongst us who are quick to catch these things, which is great. So bring it on. Lay it on us, as they say.
Oh, no, sorry. Hold on.
Okay. It's your big moment, Rick.
I know, right?
So we're looking at the calendar years, the academic year 2020 and the academic year 2025. What you had approved for us previously was 1 week short in the first half of the spring semester in each of those years. because there are a lot of administrative functions that happen in the first 5 days after we come back from break, rather than moving those dates back and starting the semester on the 13th, which does not give students who've been dropped for failure to meet prereqs and co-reqs time to adjust their schedules. We moved it. We left the date, start date on the 20th, but you'll notice that the break is now a week later and the end date is a week later than what you had previously approved. So I'm asking for your
This is the new 10-year calendar. It's part of the Faculty Senate's job is to approve this. Mm-hmm.
How does it sync with APS?
For this year, and as you may know, APS only projects 1 year out. For this year, for the 2020 year, APS is projecting spring break for March 30th through April 3rd, which is quite distant from us.
No. Well, it sounds like it's on them a little bit at this point.
My understanding is that there's a test that is mandated, test dates that are mandated by the state, and
those may change soon, right?
Yeah, mm-hmm.
All right. So I'd like a motion to approve this calendar as it appears there. Can we scroll all the way down just so we can? Okay, thanks, Rick. I think you had it. I must have screwed it. Yeah, now there it is. Okay.
So moved.
Thank you. A second? All in favor of passing this calendar? Signify.
Aye.
Any negatives? Abstentions? Yay!
Thank you.
That's one thing. And you've got one more thing.
I do have one more thing. The IPRA officer, Jeff Gassaway, came to the registrar's office after having been to the university council with the request that the institution change what he considered to be directory information. Directory information is information that we're allowed to share with third parties regarding students who are enrolled at the University of New Mexico. Currently, the list is name, address, both school and permanent address, telephone listing, electronic mail address, date of birth, field of study, including classification, year, credit load, and number of academic credits earned for degree, dates of attendance, degrees and awards, most recent previous educational agency, and participation in officially recognized activities and sports, and the weight and height of members of the athletic teams. We would like to remove from that list the most of the ones that are highlighted in yellow up above.
Yeah.
We would like to remove telephone, address, date of birth, and email addresses. And we would like to change the major field of study to the characteristics after that field to include the major field of study, but only the student's enrollment status, whether they're full-time, part-time, less than half.
Can I just ask a silly question? Is weight and height necessary? I get that that's relevant for sports, but that also seems like personal information. I don't know.
The only place that it ever really gets used is athletic programs, and that's why.
Do I want to protect an athlete too? Or, I don't know. That seems
we couldn't.
Oh.
Is that silly?
We
really
would have to have their written permission to put.
Okay.
Football players use it a lot.
Okay.
And
bigger than
basketball.
This request was actually generated more than a year ago. We had a request for information. The requester was looking for student addresses and dates of birth. We couldn't refuse to provide the information because we listed as directory information on purpose. So we would
that's
like to change that.
Great yes. idea. Whose idea was this to change?
This was came from IPRA, Jeff Gassaway.
Well, he's great.
Yes.
He's
on the lookout for our students.
I'd like a motion to approve this.
Yeah.
So moved.
A second. And I'm assuming all in favor?
All in favor.
Anyone against that? Okay,
abstentions.
Yourselves if you are. Thank you.
Any abstentions? Okay. Thank you. My team is on me. Okay, Sheila, thank you.
Thank you
great.
Very much.
Thank you so much. And we're relatively on time, actually. We're only 3 minutes late now. Okay, so I'd like to try and have a kind of a different discussion than the one we had last week on the same subject. And I've invited my colleague, Jackie Hood. You guys want to come up here? Can we get one more chair here and bring up? And Sever Bordianu. Sever is the chair of COM. Jackie's the chair of AF&T. And, you know, we tried, and possibly due to my poor leadership, we didn't have a very successful discussion last week. And so I thought I'd like to try a different way. to discuss the union issue. And it's only discussion, we're not voting on anything. So I want to, let me tell you my outline for what I see happening right now and tell me what you think. So the first thing is, I'd like to relate to you, at the Board of Regents meetings, there was time to sign up, and I spoke in support of Garnet's decision with the sports. Again, not saying I supported what she did, but supported her right to do it. And then the other big topic that came up was the unionization. And about 11 people spoke, I think. I don't know. Were you there, Matthias? I'm sorry, I can't remember. You were not there. Okay. But I took notes on what people said, so I thought I'd share to you that perspective as I heard it. And then I also, the reason I've asked Sever and Jackie to join me is we'd like to have a forum for faculty. So I'd like to discuss with you all how you could see that happening. So those are the two things I'd like to do. Oh, and then there's a third thing, sorry. Questions that have come to me from various people that I'm just going to throw out there. I'm not expecting them to be answered. It's actually quite difficult to find lawyers to consult on this subject. So there are pro-union lawyers and pro-labor and pro-management lawyers. And it's very hard to find a gal or guy in between who's comfortable doing both. So we can discuss that in a minute about the forum, but let me share with you, and it's nice that Regent Schwartz is here for this.
I'm thinking that as a legal matter, I probably should be leaving.
You're not allowed to hear anything?
Well, I'm technically part of management.
Right.
So I think that would probably be discreet
of me. Okay, hit the road, buddy.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Regent. Thank you very much. I asked
you.
he's a pretty good guy. Okay, so I'm not using names because they did it publicly, but I don't want to do that here. So the concerns that I heard were that there have been no real listening to faculty, not serving on committees where decisions are actually being made. Folks were mad that the university had hired an anti-union law firm, and that's what I had investigated a little. I heard there were kind of pro-union and anti-union. I didn't know there was a distinction, so that's something that I still have to learn about. Let's see. Let me go down. Sorry, I did not itemize this earlier. They said they wanted to work with faculty and students. They wanted a voice. They wanted to feel part of the decision-making process, right? I don't think anyone in the room would disagree with these goals, right? Everybody probably feels the same way. Again, don't have a voice in decision-making. People just in support of it, saying that 80% of the classes taught in their unit were taught by non-tenure-track faculty. I'm reading my notes. A lack of people of color in upper administration, lack of raises, diluted resources for students, and low morale. I think you get the point. I don't think if I keep reading, I'll say anything more different from that. So that's one thing. And then the questions, and I would love, I'll try and go through these briefly. I've got a lot, but they're kind of a little randomized here. One question that came up was, let me bring up AF&T. So we have an Academic Freedom and Tenure Committee. I was only able to go to the union speakers meeting for about 25 minutes because I had to leave at the Portland State, the gentleman that was representing. But he doesn't have an AF&T or a COG at their school, so he wasn't able. And the person moderating said, look, he's not going to be able to answer these questions. He doesn't have it. But he was very clear that the Faculty Senate handled grievances, and now they don't have to anymore. So there's a gray area there that's incredibly gray for me. I'd like a little more explanation. You know, what does happen with tenure, promotion, academic freedom, and tenure? Those sorts of questions have been raised. How would merit raises be handled? I'm bringing these up so that you can say, yes, this question and others may need to be answered, or God help us, if you have an answer, please bring it up. When oil and state revenue is down, do programs get cut, or do people get fired? That's a question that came up a lot. If the union says you will raise, you know, and Matisse, you may know some of these answers, you will raise the salaries by 4%, what if there aren't the funds? The gentleman there said, oh, we know there are funds. And Lee, I think it was you who said, well, we're kind of a poor school, there may not be funds. So these are the questions that come up. How are retired and visiting faculty included in the same particular class as regular tenure track faculty members? How are retention offers handled, counter offers? Why was HSC excluded? And I think you get the gist of that. I think these are about the type of questions. So I'd like to ask you, if you have any other questions, we're seeking answers, and we're seeking the people who could provide the discussion. So Sever and Jackie are here really to support this idea of a forum. And we'd like your input as the Faculty Senate is, how could this forum look to you? It's been actually super difficult to get people to represent both sides without going to their lawyer, our lawyer kind of thing. And I was ideally hoping for a lawyer like them and a lawyer like ours, but not them, right? So it wouldn't be biased. You know, like, you can see there's a dearth of administration here. They fled the room earlier. Because I asked, could we have the lawyers here? Could we have anyone to talk? And everyone is, it's not that they're under a gag order, but there's a perception that they could be manipulative if they even offer advice. And Rick, I wonder if you could put that question sheet up on the board. This is from the website, and I'm not going to lie, it was hard to find it in this form. So maybe we could send this to folks, Rick, on the listserv.
Right now.
Because on the actual presence website, it's a question and then a drop down, and a question and a drop down. I had help finding it in this form. I'm not going to read this to you, but I thought you'd rather see it there than me start to read.
What website is
it? It's on the president.unmw.edu/veterans-unionization. This is the administration, right. I'm not advocating for it. I've read it. I don't know. Truth, fact, it's one side of the issue, right? But there are some questions, and some of the ones I asked today might be answered on that. So could I open it to the floor a little bit, and to my colleagues, Sefer and Jackie, if they had some thoughts? How would you see... Sorry, but I wasn't going to let this go with our, you know, not useful conversation last week. I think too many faculty keep coming to us saying, gosh, I don't know what to do. What do you think? He said, I don't know either. So we believe... Jackie, what do you think? You got some comments? Chair of AFNT.
Could you just go into What meeting are you talking about last week?
There was a union representative from the Portland State University.
Right,
and only, there were about 30 right. people there, and some of my
That's
team were
people.
There. Yeah. And so it was nice, but yeah.
And I moderated.
He and another woman, is it Julia? Is that her name? She moderated too, right? The two of them were up there.
Yes, thank you. I just wanted to make sure.
Yeah,
I
sorry. I didn't know that wasn't clear.
Talking about.
I really
appreciated that that forum was going to be available, but it was unfortunate that.
During
teaching, noticed very late. And
I found it at the last minute too.
So
but, you know,
yeah, they were circulating that. That was the first.
Yeah, and it wasn't a small room. I was surprised, but it held everybody that came. There were no people standing outside. You know, it was a well done thing. But so the forum is important, and it's important that it come from governance leaders. We thought that it's not a faculty senate issue; it's all of it. So you know, COG has the ability to call an all faculty meeting. AFNT has a sincere interest in. Well, gee, what happens to AFNT? Is there one arbiter for every AFNT case that comes on campus? Is that person academically inclined? I mean, these are questions I honestly don't have the answer to, but I refuse to believe that in an academic setting we are not allowed to ask these questions. Right? We have to be able to have them. Oh, yes.
No, I can answer some of these questions. There are many, but I'm not an expert, and I've been actively trying to understand these things that I started my class to understand when we would be, because I was interested as a senator. Right? We can build the union that we want. So any answer, the union that will represent us, could represent us, would be the one that decides faculty that we're comfortable with. There's different models of unions. Unions usually represent labor issues, but they also, this is something that I thought that was very interesting, this is not Portland State University faculty, unions support the faculty senate and support academic freedom and support the governance by once we put the faculty handbook and these things in an agreement, then the regents cannot change it unless we as faculty approve it. And so a union would strengthen faculty governance. From what I've heard from various discussions, a union would make governance stronger. A union is here to defend faculty.
So explain to me, because the question that came to me was that you sign on for a union, let's say we agree we get a union, but that I was likening it in the way it was described to a prenup with nothing on the page. And that then we fill in the blanks like, don't worry, honey, you're going to get something, and then you end up with a dog, you know. And not the house, is what I mean, you know.
I know it's a dog.
Yeah, I know. Depending on who you're leaving. So that's the part that scared me, just a sort of a blank. You know, tabula rasa that has Nirvana on the other side, but it's legally been signed without the details. How does that work?
So, union at its basic does labor and rights for things like salary adjustments.
Wages and benefits, right?
Wages and benefits, and the university would have to sit with us in good faith and not just tell us, or they usually don't even tell us, right, that they're raising our costs of health care.
Well, they do, but at the last minute.
Correct. But we don't have a say, right? And so faculty, as we are right now, have always an advisory role, and they don't have a say. So at the basement, the union is labor representing faculty, okay? The labor side. The union does not get involved into the academic side. But if we wanted to, so usually they don't, right? If we want to add a faculty handbook and put it into the labor agreement, this then fortifies and just bulletproofs whatever we have achieved as faculty in things like tenure and governance and all of these things that right now the regents give us, but they can change it.
Yeah, it's at the leisure, you know, pleasure of the regents that we have these.
Yeah, that's it. Will be interesting. I mean, you know, Oregon, Portland State is one, and then Oregon's another one that has a union. And what I understand is their tax structure is a little bit different. They have in their tax structure a very large portion that goes straight to education. So when you say we need a 2% raise, I mean, they do have the money to do it. Not sure that's the same in New Mexico, so that would be something that maybe a forum could find out if we get the right people in the room. The other thing I understand is that labor laws vary from state to state, and therefore we'd have to look at New Mexico labor laws, which could be quite different from Oregon's. And from what I understand, and this could be all wrong, but I was told by someone who's been here forever, that they actually looked into this about 15 years ago. And one of the things they found is that New Mexico labor laws say things like, if there's a grievance procedure, it has to be, and you have a union, it has to be in the union contract. That's the part that worries me.
I don't think that's fair.
Well, that's what we need to find out.
Right, that's what we're just looking for, some more facts, right?
Right. So when it comes to the way the university works, the union will not kind of change. We will not try to make away anything that union governance, like a period of tenure, and the Senate does. It would just want to help and support. If, on the issue of right salaries, right, we sit down and we negotiate. If there is no money, then there is no money. And then that's, we can't negotiate much. But if there was, or if the union can go and gather support, the unions are also good at influencing legislatures, right? Then we can perhaps help increase the pie and bring more money to the university. Unions, what they usually are very effective at doing is they go to the legislature and help bring money. They create pots of money to deal with issues of equity, so that if there's equity or issues of retention, they bring those, they create these pots that they negotiate with the regents. And so these pots are created so that then we have retained faculty, we can have the issues of equity, salary diminishments, these things. The union would come and say, no, you can't do this, or suddenly you. It's an arbitrary view.
I'm not saying the union would. I'm saying the New Mexico laws would put some constraints on what the union or us or anyone else could do, and we don't know what those are. So my first thought was to get in a labor lawyer, right?
Okay, so Ernesto next to me is a lawyer, so he's a law professor, and he's been working.
Labor law?
He's not a senator.
She asked if I was a labor attorney. No.
He is a faculty member of the university that is active. I am sure we can bring lawyers or faculty from other places that know these things. There may be a campaign of misinformation that may happen to try to divide the conquer. This is what union busting law firms do. Right, that's their job. Be careful to talk, and maybe perhaps in this forum that we can bring people to relations on both sides.
That's what I'm hoping for. That would be the perfect thing, right? I don't want to hear from any one side, the side I believe in or the other side. I want to hear both.
Right.
Why would we?
Sorry. Cheryl, can I let Jason go next? Because he was next. I'm sorry. I'm trying to honor that. Yeah.
I don't want to take up a lot of time, but I wanted to perhaps give you a chance to answer the question from Pamela or help give you some help with that by asking it in a different way. A lot of people, I think, are concerned, like you said, you called it the blank check issue. Like, yeah. I don't want to sign a check that I don't know what it is. Can you speak to the timeline? I know the administration, you know, in our private meetings, they won't say that either, but I'm wondering if anybody could talk about the timeline. At what point are we going to vote on something substantive? And at what point would we be able to say, no, that's not what I want to vote for, and have the negotiation continue? Mm-hmm. You know, how many such stopping points are we going to have, and how much of a lead time are we going to have to inform ourselves?
So, tomorrow, the lawyer from the university and the union, potential union, meets at the labor Labor Board, and we're going to discuss these things. The university may ask for a petition to have an election, and the university responded, no, this is not valid because...
they questioned the bargaining union, I believe is what it's called.
Right.
So the number of professorial titles that was put forth,
right.
The university said, wait a minute, not that guy. I mean,
right.
That guy, you know.
But the things that they questioned, let's be honest, the things that the question is, for example, that branch heads are not faculty. They said that, right? They said people, lecturers are not faculty. They said basically that the only faculty were tenure track full time.
There were some other people who were asking, why would a retiree have a vote? Why would a visiting professor have a vote? There were some more, I think, obvious questions. I hear what you're saying. The branch are faculty. I don't understand that one at all. But I did question the visiting professor or a retiree because they don't have voting rights anymore. Wondered why. So
maybe they don't have voting rights, but they should have some sort of rights. They should be able to be defended.
To be
defended by the union. There should be some sort of rules governing what a visiting faculty is.
Why was HSC left off then? Because they're a third of our faculty.
We're sort of supervisors.
Well, not all.
Well.
I don't know the answer to that. Perhaps because they're very different.
Okay. I mean, I was offended for the HSC because that's a third of our Rob.
That's too vague an answer.
So maybe it's that North Campus has different rules with respect to tenure and different competitive.
They have normal tenure track, and then they have those who choose a clinician track. But Rob, you're on that side. Let me ask one of those guys too.
So one of the issues I brought up in our recent HSC council meeting was that the North Campus is being pretty much summarily dismissed as our review because we're just not part of it, but we are part of it because. According to what I read on the president's site, there is New Mexico law that states that any type of employment situation grievance needs to be arbitrated by the union. Well, if we're not going to be part of the union, that means there's going to be a disempowerment of AFT, which North Campus relies very heavily on with grievances. So a decision on the main campus for unionization is going to impact us significantly. But we've been sort of dismissed on the North Campus as not being part of it. I think this just highlights some of the need for labor attorneys to get involved so we really get some information to make sure that we're safeguarded on the North Campus.
Right. I mean, a union would not negotiate and change anything on the North Campus unilaterally if you guys are not represented. You would continue this as is. My understanding is that we started to try to organize a new campus because we're a community of interest, because these are, we have understand what our needs are that may be different from medical school. My understanding is that we like to be inclusive, but we have to start somewhere, right? We start trying to organize faculty and campus. We are of the idea that we should include everybody. The university is trying to divide and conquer. Just by everybody that is non-tenure tracking campus just should not belong to this part.
I think my team was sad, and I was sad only about the HSC part, because we've worked very hard, my last year's teams, to make the North Campus divide, you know, the Lomas divide go away. And I thought it was just weird to leave out an entire third segment of our population into that. And then to pick a retiree and say they have more of an interest, that's just something I speak for a lot of people who contacted me about that one.
Right. And I cannot answer directly.
No, I know, but Ethan, you are so gracious. To thank you for playing host to the viewpoint. I appreciate that. Yeah, no, it's a lot to ask of you. I really appreciate it. But I had a couple of other people. Cheryl is from a branch campus.
I just have a question. I'm a little confused about why Faculty Senate, representing faculty, would want to hire a lawyer, a labor lawyer, and a management lawyer. Would the administration have a management lawyer? And then
this is only so people can make an informed decision.
We have no money to hire.
Unless I find free lawyers dropping out of the sky, this is probably not going to happen. But my point is, a lot of the faculty came to me and said, gosh, I wouldn't know what to do. You know, how would you vote? I said, well, I don't know either. That's why I want to find... And I feel like every time we ask the questions, it's hard to get a straight answer from either side. Everybody has their own viewpoint, but they don't... So I want the faculty to have the benefit. I think that's our job as faculty representatives, is to have enough education so people can make an informed decision. I mean, I think of it like a political campaign. I moderated a debate between gubernatorial candidates so people could choose which one they liked.
But don't we already hear the management side from the hire?
Well, I guess I haven't heard a lot. So
I don't know. I'm just curious.
Yeah.
I've never blocked you.
No, neither I, so I don't know.
So I'm just curious.
And honestly, can I just make
go ahead.
I don't want sides.
Yeah, it's that perspective. Right. Perspective.
I'm a very analytical person, so I kind of like to know what the facts are. So what is it exactly going to look like? And honestly, if somebody could hand me the thing, a contract, and I could read it, I could make an informed vote, right?
Right.
But without that, it's hard. So we're grappling with how to get the information out there, how to get the facts.
And that's what, and Jason reminded me just now that we have very little time left, so I'll get to the questions if I can, but how I know everyone has a question, but that's great. How could we best present this? We'd like your input. I mean, the three of us can work with our teams and just come up with a forum, but what are your thoughts for what would best serve our constituents? How could we do this?
The two lawyers that we can get.
Yeah, I know, right?
Rob, I have another thing maybe you should think about. We are a university which has different type of constituents, right?
Mm-hmm.
There are other constituents who have union, the hospital, has unions.
The police have unions.
The police have unions. There's staff probably has unions. So instead of just kind of going out and kind of dismissing it, you should be looking at those. By the way, I do come from the union system, and I used to be a strong union person. But there is a benefit to it as well. But again, for those of you who are thinking we don't have union, we already have.
Yeah, we have five unions on this campus. Right, right.
The other thing that you have to take this perspective with is, I think sometime back, if you had seen how many people are looking for a job and looking to leave, you might see that's pretty 70s.
Yeah.
That's pretty high.
60%.
If that was not the case, I don't think we will be talking about the union.
Agreed.
If that kind of thing stay, then you will have people looking for some way to buy your insurance.
Right, I got to cut you off because there's more things people who want to talk. Who had their hand up? Yeah, Stefan. Sorry,
Leah. Definitely need more information. You know, how would a contract like this look like? And, you know, we realize that faculty governance has a particular targets that we're involved in. Negotiating salaries is not necessarily targeted, as far as I understand.
Mm-hmm.
So it's sort of a separate entity, protect potentially complementary, but I think it needs to be defined so that we understand what is the relationship. The other aspect is that I'm aware of colleagues, not only here on main campus, but also in the medical school, who have about 10 years of research faculty. They come to me and ask me, who represents us? Where can we go? Who will support us and help us with research and speed? There's a little bit of an attitude there. And again, I think it would be helpful to see what the document looks like, what the link would be, to see what might be or conflict might be.
So, a potential look at a contract. Yeah. And Matisse, I also wanted to ask you, CNM had started with AFT, and then they dropped that group. Do you know why? Because I'm just wondering if we could learn something.
Well, my conversation with people at CNM is that they decided to go their own way and just faculty without any representation.
Can you be a union without representation?
Yes. A union is faculty. It's we get together. The reason why we have AAUP and AFT helping us is because they have the experience, they have the lawyers, they have the organizing capacity to really start a spark. And this is what they did. And then it's us. The union would be us faculty.
And if we were our own faculty, would we have to pay a due if we were just
You can free rent. Supreme Court ruling just said, first of all, New Mexico was a right-to-work state.
Right, yep.
But then there's a Supreme Court ruling last year that says
I read that law. That's not. I didn't mean that. I know that one doesn't have to pay dues to be a union in New Mexico. What I meant was if we unionized without an AFT, would we pay each other dues, or would we just...
We would decide a union is faculty getting together and caucusing and deciding what contract, what we want, what are our priorities, what are we going to negotiate with faculty, what are we going to put into a bargaining agreement. So a contract would be exactly what we faculty decide, right? Any kind of staff from AAUP, which is AAUP is the American Association of
University
Professors, the ones that blocked us tenure and things like that, right? They would be our advisors, right? And we decide, caucus as faculty and only faculty vote, and we decide what we want. There are many examples of bargaining agreements, contracts that you can see. Some include bringing the entire faculty handbook and put it in there, because if you put it in the bargaining agreement, then it becomes law, and then they can't turn around and change it. Some don't. Some say, no, the union only does fights for cost of living adjustments and benefits, and then if academic career of tenure decides that there's some issue, and the union would bring in lawyers and help the faculty member.
And I think that's the primary concern to me is the writing of that contract. I have something on my wall that has a bunch of equations, and then a line in between, and the scientist writes, and then a miracle happens.
Yeah,
and the scientist says, you know, I think you need to be more explicit in step two, and that's what that I've heard.
Yeah, and the contract is us faculty, we decide how we want it to work.
But if we sign a contract with the university or with AT and then the university, how can you write a contract afterwards?
No. So this is what would happen. If the university... We meet tomorrow.
Mm-hmm.
And likely the game of the university is delay.
Mm-hmm.
As a result, they don't want us faculty to have a vote, because we already got almost 60% of the faculty that signed cards that says we want to vote. And so we want to vote this semester. But the university says if it happened this semester, for sure they would lose, because already 60% of the faculty voted, we want a union.
Mm-hmm.
Then what they try to do is delay the interview. Just throw things and see what sticks, right?
So you expect the worst motives from them. You're certain that they don't have any other motives. I'm just curious about that.
So my dad was a law professor. He said, you can tell whether the guy is guilty by the lawyer that he hires.
Well, I don't know. If you were divorcing me and you hire a lawyer, I'd hire a lawyer too, right?
I know. But they hired a company, a law firm that specializes in union busting.
But isn't that what I learned, though, Matisse? There are only two kinds of lawyers.
Right.
Like they're management. I mean,
the university could have said something. We respect the faculty, and we're going to call for a vote. Right? You guys are allowed. As a democracy, you guys are allowed to vote.
Yeah. Sorry, do we get to decide who votes on who gets to vote? We don't seem to have a say in who gets to vote.
Now we're going to go highly likely into litigation, where we're going to decide...
Who's we?
Us, faculty. This is just faculty. We're still not organized.
The ones that are pro-union have assigned
cards,
right?
The ones that are pro-union, with the help of our lawyers, are going to meet with the university lawyers, and we're going to fight, litigate over who is faculty.
So we have lawyers?
We don't. I guess what Jackie's saying is, why wouldn't the whole faculty have voted on who is voting faculty?
Right. Well, the voting faculty is laid out.
Well, and I don't mean the voting faculty, yes.
Or at least the leadership of the established faculty senate.
So the labor board eventually will decide, right? We're litigating in the labor board is the one that decides who is faculty. Once.
I know.
That's a labor board.
But I think what Jackie's saying is we have delineated who is voting faculty. Why is it different in this situation? Go ahead, Lee. You're going to burst.
You need to introduce it. Dose of reality here.
Okay. Go for it.
So state employees in New Mexico are not allowed to strike. That is the labor law in New Mexico, and that is the hammer that unions have ultimately in their power. There are unions in this state and in this university already, and you can observe whether they have been effective or not. There's the AFT, the teachers union in the state. Basically, they beg for things. There is 1199 and the nurses' union at the hospital. Basically, they have to beg for things, and by and large, they do not get them because they ultimately don't have the power to force the issue. And it would be exactly the same with a faculty union. And I'm pro-union, mm-hmm. Okay? But remember what happened to the air traffic controllers in Reagan's day. You know, the law was they couldn't strike and they were all fired. Okay. So you have to look at the history of unions that are state employees in this state and see whether they have been effective or not.
I'm sure Matisse can say one. Yeah, go ahead, Ann. Sorry.
And this has nothing to do with which side we have on or not, because we don't really have it. But I get concerned as a faculty member on the health sciences side when I hear that 60% of faculty has requested a vote if a third of what makes UNM faculty.
Right.
So you really have 60% of 67%, right? And I just... The work that I have done, that Brandy has done, and the other members to try to get rid of this lowest divide
right.
is so painful to then say, and I appreciate you said we have to start somewhere. So all I'm saying is I need to say you are starting at a schism that is almost bridged and is going to just wrench it open.
I'm sorry. That was not my decision.
No, and I'm not.
Yeah, we're not playing
with you. No, I agree with you. I agree with you.
That's really tough.
I personally believe that it should be all inclusive, right? If we would have, but let me say this: if we would have added North Campus to this petition, and if we would have had talked to faculty there, likely the university wants to make it the same. Those are separate. They're different.
They
responded that adjuncts.
We are going to handbook just as anyone else is.
Yeah. Okay. So you guys, it's at the hour. I know people have to leave, and I appreciate everyone saying because it's such a fascinating conversation. I haven't heard too many ideas, except it would be great if we could get two lawyers from different perspectives to show up. I'm sorry, governance is working on it. Unless you have an idea for that, I'd ask that you come to me with it, because I want to say the last two items in case anyone has something to say. I appreciate the civil discussion, especially Matias, because I'm acting like you are the god of the union here, but thank you for being open to having... No, and I know that, and I think you really presented it well, so I appreciate that. Just a quick thing, old business, new business. I feel like we go through everything here, probably not. And public comment is the last item on the agenda. Any public comments? Two. Oh, coffee. Go ahead.
the conversation that we just had largely revolved around the pros and cons of union, which I would suggest is premature. I'm neither pro nor con myself right now. But it's very clear from this discussion, we are not informed enough for a vote right now. So my public comment would be, don't be in a hurry to vote on this. Rather, we need to create a format to educate ourselves and to be more informed. That we're academics, that's what we do. And I would be very uncomfortable with a vote tomorrow, no matter how it turned out, because I wouldn't believe it was an informed vote. Mm-hmm.
No, thank you. John, you raise your hand.
Yes, hi, I'm John Lavelle from the law school. I spoke last week concerning some transparency matters. I'm still concerned about that. Regent Schwartz, I indicated that having a good relationship between the regents and the faculty and the Senate would be all important. I totally agree with that. And that means that all of the delegated authority that comes to this body, when this body meets, it must comply with the requirements of the Open Meetings Act. President Kyle, thank you for requesting that I send you the copy of the Inspection of Public Records Act compliance guide. And that's available online. You can all Google it. If a compliance guide, it gives clear examples of how a body like this can actually come into compliance, because currently this body is not in compliance.
How do you think we're not? Because we did look into what you suggested.
Yes, I think for this meeting in particular, there was not it's a 72-hour notice requirement.
And it goes out exactly 3 o'clock on Friday.
I got my notice yesterday. Was there a notice that came
No, we sent out two notices,
two notices,
Friday and Monday.
Okay. And then the other non-compliance matter that is clearly a problem here is the lack of specificity on the agenda. The agenda must actually indicate the substantive issues that will be discussed. Simply having something that says President's Report, Provost's Report, are classic examples of what do not comply with the Inspection of Public Records Act. So in the future, for example, under the matters, under the new issues to be discussed, if it indicates, for example, to discuss the matter of unionizing, I think that will give proper public notice to what's being discussed right now, because right now I think we got a lot more people here to discuss the matter of unionizing than people are given the notice that's required by state law. So, and where there's a weakness like that, the Attorney General, if he investigates, could simply find that all of the actions taken at this during this meeting are invalid. That's the language used under state law. So, just to kind of tighten up the ship here and make sure that we're not continuing noncompliance, I think that we should do so in the future. So. Specificity on the agenda is I think, a number one issue. And also, there has to be an annual meeting of this body to determine what constitutes reasonable notice. I don't think this body has ever had such a meeting. Am I wrong, President?
I've never heard that. We have a 72-hour rule, same as the Board of Regents.
Right.
And we don't have to meet about it. It's mandated.
The Inspector of Public Records Act specifically states that every public body must have an annual meeting to determine as a body what constitutes reasonable notice.
I thought that was given to us. I mean, I love reasonable notice to be, you know, an hour that I can check the agenda.
No, it's actually in part of the black letter law of the Open Meetings Act. So I could ask your staff to take a look at the compliance guide. On pages 16 and 17.
And they did look into your indication that the radio and television is needed to be notified. And, Rick, what was the output of that?
The request has to come in writing from the station itself or the news agency.
Yes, I realize that.
Yeah, we don't have to write it
from the media. So that any media outlet would need to provide exactly that.
Right, but you accused us last week, I'm sorry, of not providing the television with our agenda. And it's not required that we do.
As I recall, it indicated that the media would have to be open to the media.
It's open to anyone who walks in the door.
So just, you're there's here. A request made, then it has to be honored.
Right. No one has ever written us and said, I think so. But I just want to say we looked into something you said. It wasn't correct, and we're in compliance with it. So we can look into compliance with this annual meeting of the 72-hour rule. I thought that was mandated outside. Well, I've never been to a meeting where a president's report details what the president will say.
Those meetings out of compliance with state law.
Maybe.
I think there's also the expectation of being reasonable. There are many things that will show up in the president's report that just happened minutes ago. And so that would preclude...
It would limit me to what I could say to my senators.
It all depends on what the Attorney General's view is, what constitutes the required specificity.
But I think you have to, but it has to be a reasonable, but the expectation has to be reasonable. And it is not reasonable that you wouldn't talk about immediate actions under the President's report because she didn't dictate everything that she had to say 72 hours before.
All right, thank you. Any other public comments? Thank you, everybody, for sure. Thank you, second. All in favor. Thank you.
There are unions that you have